Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Colette Phillips, President and CEO of Colette Phillips Communications, founder and president of Get Connected, and the author of The Includers, The Seven Traits of Culturally Savvy Anti-Racist Leaders. And today she and I are discussing how to lead inclusively. Welcome, Colette, and thank you so much for being here.
Oh, so good to be here.
I am very excited for today's show. And in part, you know, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag for all of our listeners. You and I have spoken before and had a really great conversation about this topic. And I think it's one of the reasons why I am so energized about what we're about to talk about here, because I think that you very much are a thought leader as it relates to this landscape and inclusivity generally. So that's why I'm like very excited. But before we kind of get into inclusivity generally, why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself and how you got into this line of work?
Okay. Well, as you heard, my name is Colette Phillips. I'm the president and CEO of Colette Phillips Communications, which is the strategic public relations and diversity and inclusion marketing company. We help companies sort of connect with diverse markets and with the women market and markets of color. And we also help them navigate today's changing landscape, both workforce and marketplace, because our country is becoming increasingly more culturally diverse. Companies are doing business in a very diverse global village. And so I consult with C-suite executives and CEOs and their senior leadership team to help them navigate all of that. And in addition, I founded a networking organization called Get Connected with a K, as a way to break barriers down, to bring people together cross-culturally for business connection, for a social connection, for personal connections. And we typically have a programmatic aspect to our networking events, which occur every other month. And we have a specific theme that we focus on. For example, Lunar New Year and Black History Month, and we are bringing the Asian and Black communities together in a way to celebrate our shared values and our stories that often people think they're different, but they're very similar. So
very
that's
nice.
part of who I am. And I wrote this book, The Includers, because I wanted to ensure that for those who are doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work, that we really make sure that the inclusion is the linchpin of diversity and equity. You can't have diversity without inclusion. You can't have inclusion without equity. You can't have equity without belonging. So that to me was very important. And so I want to applaud you for hosting this very, I think, timely and important conversation.
No, I very much agree. And I think a lot of leaders struggle very much with what is inclusivity? What does it mean? How do we accomplish it? And in large part, because we each have our own lived experiences and the ability to put ourselves in other shoes, understand their lived experiences and the differences is oftentimes something, you know, really difficult, I think, even for the best of leaders. Colette, what about kind of what you're doing? How did you get here? I mean, was there any striking moment kind of in your background where you say, gosh, this is what I want to do? Because so many of the things, both in your book, but then also with Get Connected, are, I think, wonderful additions to the community and assisting in the DEI space more generally.
Well, you know, truly, I grew up on an island in the Caribbean, and to be honest, never thought of race in terms of, I knew I was a Black person, but it wasn't a driving force for me until I came to Boston in the 70s, right in the smack in the middle of the busing controversy. And realize how very, you know, contentious that situation was and how divisive. And some people might say, when I graduated from college, I moved back to Antigua. I became the press secretary to the prime minister of the island. I had a television show. I was Oprah before Oprah was Oprah. I mean, I was the Oprah of Antigua. Or maybe the Barbara Walters. I'm not as old as Barbara Walters, but I kind of had one of the first ever talk shows on television. And the show was called Let's Talk. And it was an issues focused half an hour weekly talk show. So I came back to Boston. Some people would say either I'm crazy or I'm a glutton for punishment. But I came back to do my master's, and I took courses in cross-cultural communications, being from an island and recognizing the importance of people breaking barriers down. You know, I think of Anthony Bourdain, who I think was a master of the late Anthony Bourdain, of really demonstrating how food, culture, and getting to know people and getting to explore who they are through their culture. As you said very brilliantly, you know, walking in somebody else's shoes, in their lived experience, is something that we don't always get an opportunity to do. I worked in nonprofits. I was the first PR director for the largest Girl Scout Council in New England, which is now Girl Scouts of Eastern Massachusetts. It was then called Patriots Trail Girl Scout Council. And then I went to work for Cablevision of Boston, now Comcast Xfinity, as their head of their PR. And then I left that job and went to work for Sonesta International Hotels as their PR director for the Royal Sonesta property in Cambridge. And so one of the things that I when I decided to start my PR firm, I realized that a lot of companies were ignoring markets of color. They were literally leaving money on the table. And I thought, how silly, you know, your market mix did not include Black people, Latinos, Asians, immigrants, women. And so I decided that I was going to differentiate my business by helping companies understand how to engage, how to market their goods and services to these untapped markets, how to increase your bottom line and your market share by targeting these markets. And so for me, it was all about the cross-cultural communications, cross-cultural marketing, multicultural marketing, as it's now called. Back then, they called it ethnic marketing. And very few companies were doing that. They had a stereotype perception that these markets didn't have money. And my thing is, well, if you're a supermarket, people of color eat, so they need food. They wear shoes and clothes. So if you are a retailer, you know, you should be marketing to them. And if you're a bank, they buy homes, they take loans, they send their kids to college. And if they're you're an insurance company, they want to insure their house, their car, themselves. So you're missing out if you're not targeting those markets. And so that's how I got into the whole aspect of diversity, equity, and inclusion, even before it was diversity, equity, and inclusion. So in a lot of ways, I pioneered DE&I in Boston, and dare I say, in the region, because there was no one out there doing what I was doing at the time.
And one of the things I love about how varied your background is in different industries, both in the nonprofit realm and also in telecommunications, and then in all these hospitality, I mean, you have this very broad life experience.
Yes.
More generally, and it comes out in the Includers. So, you know, I do hope that our listeners are able to pick up a copy of the book, because there are some really interesting elements, not just as we speak about our topic today about inclusion, but more generally kind of when we look at business, when we look at leaders kind of within business or within society more generally. And that kind of leads to that first element is, you know, we're talking about inclusion, but what does that word mean? I'd love for you to kind of set that foundational level for us, that when we use that word, what do we mean when we say inclusion?
Exactly. I think a lot of, there are people who have this, you know, we have this discourse going on today in our society where people have kind of weaponized the whole aspect of diversity, equity, and inclusion as if somehow it's a bad thing. I think if we look back at our founding fathers, even though at the time, Black people like myself were not considered, women for that matter, were considered to be equal to the males, or Black people equal to white. We were considered two-thirds human. Don't know how that happened or anybody thought of that, but they came up with a brilliant motto for America, the Latin phrase of e pluribus unum, recognizing that this country was basically attracting, even back then, people from different parts of the world were coming to America's shores, whether it was to escape famine, escape poverty, escape, you know, fascism, whatever it is, they were persecution, religious persecution, or political persecution. They were coming to America. And the whole idea of America is we are a country of immigrants. So when I hear people talk about, go back to your country, we don't want immigrants. Well, unless you are a indigenous American Indian, you are an immigrant. Your parents were not born in this country. You might be 3-4 generations into your being here, but you didn't originate in America.
Absolutely.
You know? And
yeah.
So it is, the whole concept of inclusion is just that. You cannot speak of inclusion and exclude anybody. And part of the basis of my book is we have to include the people that I refer to as religious minorities. So Jews should be a part of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, these are all minority groups, religious groups. They should be part of the conversation. And drum roll, please, white men, because the reality is white men, whether we like it or not, are still very much at the top of the pinnacle when it comes to, you know, business, government, policy, sports, entertainment. The C-suites are filled with white males. And I believe that white males are the secret sauce to addressing the issues of inequality. And therefore, they must be at the table. They have to be included because we are talking about inclusion.
And I love how inclusive your definition of inclusivity is. And I think it's so important for us to start at that foundational level to say, like,
absolutely,
this is something that we're all going to work on and everyone's coming to the table to discuss it. And whether or not it's a majority view, a minority view, whoever, everyone needs to be at the table for this dialogue. And this is a perfect time for us to take a really quick break, because then I want to jump into kind of how we get there more generally. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Colette Phillips, President and CEO of Colette Phillips Communications, founder and president of Get Connected, and author of The Includers, The Seven Traits of Culturally Savvy Anti-Racist Leaders. And today she and I are discussing how to lead inclusively. Right before the break, Colette, you know, you defined inclusion for me, and I think that that's, you know, such an important baseline for us. And one of the aspects that we've talked a little bit about is about walking in someone else's shoes and kind of understanding everyone's lived experience. I'd love to transition a little bit to, what are your thoughts on how leaders' implicit bias plays a role in their attempt to create an inclusive environment more generally?
Well, I think that it's very important for inclusive leaders to recognize and acknowledge their own cultural biases. We all have cultural biases. It really doesn't matter. So self-awareness is very important. Having what I call cultural intelligence, you know, which is what I call your cultural IQ. And what does that mean? It means being able to cue in to other people's culture. And I love that phrase you used earlier, because it's a phrase that Native American, Indigenous American, there's a proverb that says, don't judge me until you have walked a mile in my moccasins. So until you have stood in somebody else's space and lived experience, don't judge them, you know, get to know them. Life begins at the end of your comfort zone. And I think it's human nature that we want to interact. We want to be around people who look like us, who we feel share our similarities. But at the end of the day, when you think about it, all of us, it doesn't matter where we are from, where we were born, how we grew up, all of us have certain needs. You know, if you think about it, it is the Maslow's aspirational ladder of how we get to the top. We need to feel like we belong. We need to be successful. We want to have a good job. We want to take care of our families. We want to have a home. And so we find, as we begin to explore our own biases about how we view people, you know, how we, when we think about a Muslim, what do we think about? Do we think of them in the terms of you know, all Muslims are terrorists. Do we think, is that what we are bringing to our lens? When you think of Black people, do you think they all, you know, are on welfare? They're the welfare queens and kings. No, they're not. When you think of people in Appalachia, you know, are they the ones that are, you know, sort of poor white people who got issues and, you know, whatever the stereotype is that people bring to their thinking of others, having that self-awareness is key to being an inclusive leader and asking yourself questions, you know, for self-awareness. You know, am I thinking of this? You know, when you're interviewing somebody for a job, you know, am I thinking of this person with a clear mind, or am I allowing my own personal views and biases to sort of bubble up to the top?
So absolutely, being, yeah,
having
no.
that understanding of emotional intelligence, and I would say also self-management, you know, how do you do that? The ability to manage our emotions so that we don't make decisions or take actions purely from an emotional perspective. You know, you should have head and heart should be working in tandem with each other. When leaders practice self-management, they're in control of a variety of situations that they're placed in, because you're learning to step back, take the emotions out of it, and let's be gentle. Let's think about the situation. Also having social awareness, you know, your surroundings, your emotions, your decision-making. The murder of George Floyd, for example, in this country marked a emotional watershed for many Black Americans and Black employees who saw themselves in him and his experience. And I think it was an awakening for white America, because it's like, I cannot unsee what I saw. I saw Derek Chauvin, a police officer who is hired to protect and serve, with his knee on the neck of a man for 9 minutes and 46 seconds. And we watched George Floyd's life go out of him. And that was shocking. It was, we were in disbelief. And I think a lot of my friends who are white said to me, oh my goodness, I never knew this was what Black people truly experience, and the fear. And there is something, Tawny, that we refer to in the Black culture professionals, they call it code switching, that when you are, women do it too, when you're in a room filled with men, or you're in a room filled with people who are different from you, you put on one face. And then when you get back with your woman, when you get with your girlfriends, then you really let loose. You cut loose and you say what you're really thinking and what you feel. And it's the same thing with Latinos, with Black people, with Asian people. You zip your lip, you put on the game face. And I think a lot of people after George Floyd said, you know what, I'm done with the code switching. People either accept me and my authentic self and who I am. I need to bring my whole self to work. I need to bring my whole self to every relationship so that I am being authentic. I am not that you are faking, but you are sort of what I would say, you know, keeping your true self under wraps.
Yeah.
And that's not healthy.
And when we look at inclusion, I think the concepts of the importance of leaders understanding both code switching and covering, and the fact that they are different and distinct, but that we do see individuals in the work environment who feel the necessity to both cover and to code switch. And that right. That's not an issue that's on the employee, but that's a cultural issue within the organization.
Absolutely.
what within the organization is leading individuals to feel as though the only way that they can be included or accepted is to code switch or to cover more generally within the organization. And, you know, a lot of the things when you're talking about inclusion that comes to mind is, and you mentioned it briefly kind of right at the beginning when we were talking about implicit biases, about comfort. And you've Yes. mentioned in the past the importance for leaders to be comfortable in being uncomfortable. And I'd love Yes. for you to tell our listeners a Yes. little bit more about what you mean when you say that.
Say that. Well, the issue when you talk about inequality, when you talk about race, when you talk about gender inequality, it can be uncomfortable. But I call these conversations courageous conversations because it takes courage to be able to have a conversation that you know, if you're a white person and you're talking to Black people, your Black colleagues, about what they go through, what they feel. If you're a man and you're talking to women, you know, how they feel in a particular setting, it certainly makes one uncomfortable. And so if you are not uncomfortable, there is something wrong with you. You should be uncomfortable, but it's okay to be uncomfortable because the discomfort and the uncomfortableness that you feel is not a sense of guilt or shame or blame, but a sense of, I call it compassion, you know, a feeling like, oh my goodness, I feel so sorry that we live in a world where women or people of color or anybody is treated other than with dignity and a respect for their humanity. And I think people, when they talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, there are people who think somehow it's a zero-sum game, that somehow it means that we are playing musical chairs. And when the music stops, if I'm not in front of a chair, I'm out of the game. No, DE&I is like a Thanksgiving table. That's what it's about. What do we do when we have a Thanksgiving table or a celebration? We add more chairs at the table. We cook more food. We have more drinks. We expand, you know, the menu. We expand our table so that everybody can feel comfortable. They can have a meal. They can be welcomed and they can feel like they belong. And that's the essence of diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's not about replacement. It's not replacing anybody. It's being fully inclusive of everyone so that, you know, I don't think it's, we don't need hate. We don't need bigotry. We don't need intolerance. We need love. We need compassion. We need cultural intelligence. We need connections, collaborations, character.
No, and I mean, I love that example of the Thanksgiving table, because I think it's just such an apt example of kind of explaining what we're looking for when we discuss DE&I, especially in a corporate environment. I mean, when we're talking too about this concept of being comfortable, feeling uncomfortable, and also having a broader cultural knowledge as we look at other people's lived experiences. I mean, it clearly brings those concepts of privilege to top of mind, which I feel as though in our society recently has received such significant backlash because of whether or not it's sound bites about what we mean when we say privilege, or how it interrelates with ideas concerning bystander behavior and ways in which we can appropriately be supportive allies to other individuals. And I'd love to get your thoughts both on, you know, being an ally as well as kind of these concepts surrounding privilege more generally.
Yes. Thank you for asking that question, because privilege, as I say often to my friends who are white, does not mean that you as a white person may not have had a tough life. You might have grown up in abject poverty, in a broken home, in, you know, a home where there was domestic violence or, you know, whatever the circumstances were that you grew up in. Yes, a single household, a single family, single mother household or father household, parent household. It doesn't mean that that didn't happen to you. When you talk about privilege, it means your skin color was not one of the things that prevented you or was a barrier to your entry into a room, into success, into a college, into a job. You know, that's what privilege is. It means that when two people walk into a room, there are people in the room that's going to have a perception of me as a Black woman walking in the room, whatever that perception may be, than they will have of somebody. You know, I could walk into a room. I have a master's degree. I am an entrepreneur. I have a successful business. And I walk in with someone who might be white with a high school diploma, and not that there's anything wrong with them, but they do not have the skill sets that I do. But at the same time, depending on who is in the room, they may look at that person and say, oh, here comes this very successful person. You know, if they're dressed nicely, you don't make the assumption that this person may not have a degree. They may not be as qualified as the other person who is a person of color. Or if a man and a woman walks in, people automatically assume, you know, the guy is going to be, you know, the dominant person or the person who has the credentials, whereas the woman may be the one with the higher credentials. So that is what, when you talk about privilege, that is what privilege means. It's not you didn't have a hard life. It's just like your skin color or your ethnicity or your accent or your place of birth is not one of the barriers for you. And to some extent, we all have certain privileges. And so we just need to be aware of what that means. And I think when you are inclusive leaders, understand and recognize their privilege. And one of the things we can do as a privileged person, you can use your leverage, your personal privilege and power to really stand up and speak out when you see injustices, when you see somebody being treated disrespectfully because of their skin color, because of their accent, because, you know, they may be, maybe English is not their first language, to be able to stand up for that person and to basically make a conscious decision that on my watch, I am never going to be in a situation where someone is treated disrespectfully. Their humanity is not acknowledged. That's what it means to use your privilege and your power wisely and for good.
No, thank you for that. I mean, it's really helpful. And it leads us to a good time to take another quick break before we jump into our next topic. So thank you for joining us. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We're going to be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored to thank our sponsors for their support and contributions to this program. We thank the law firms of Verrill, Jackson Lewis, and Sheehan Finney, along with our partners, Paper Trails and Strategic HR. Want to be the next sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say HR Power Hour sponsor.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Colette Phillips, president and CEO of Colette Phillips Communications, founder and president of Get Connected, and the author of The Includers. And actually, Colette, that's what I'd love to jump into this next segment and talk a little bit more about is your new book, The Includers. And first, I'd like to start with, you know, how did the concept of the book come about? I mean, we've been having this really wonderful conversation, I think, about inclusivity generally, your experiences and really helpful points that you can share both with clients and thankfully to our listeners today about how to be stronger leaders more generally. But why write a book?
Well, I think I wrote a book because I think that there are many well-intended people who, especially after the whole George Floyd incident, people wanted to take action. They want to say, how can I make a difference? How can I ensure that we create a better inclusive country, better inclusive community? How do I pass this on if you're a parent to my children so that they understand the importance of inclusiveness and respect for other people's culture and getting to know people cross-culturally? And I thought about my whole lived experience, my consulting business, the people I have worked with over the years, what I have garnered, what I've learned. And, you know, I realized that I had a treasure trove of knowledge that should be shared. And so I decided during the pandemic, 2020, 2021, that having nowhere to go in the evenings, because my life is full, I'm usually out three, four nights a week. And I thought, let me make myself productive. You know, I can't just binge watch Bridgerton and, you know, all these shows on Netflix and Prime and Law and Order. You know, I need to do something productive and use my brain. And I thought, I should write a book. And this is a book, I don't want it to be an academic book where people go, oh, you know, I wanted to read a book that was compelling, interesting, insightful, that would offer advice, insights, and tips on things that you can do to be an inclusive leader. And I thought the best way to do that is to use authentic stories. You know, stories can really teach people. And I will tell you, one of the men that is featured in my book and mentioned in my book, rather, is the late Norman Lear, who just passed away recently at 99. Norman Lear, back in the 70s and 80s, basically used humor as a touch point for teaching us. He made us laugh and then he made us think. If you remember, All in the Family was all about a bigoted guy named Archie Bunker. And at the end of every episode, Archie always had the rug pulled out from under him. And at the end of it, the laugh really was on Archie. For his ignorance, for the outrageous things he would say. And every week was a teachable moment that he used to teach us. And so I thought, if we could tell snippets of stories of CEOs, in my book, there are many, many stories, but I took eight, seven men who I thought were examples of who I call super includers, whose lives and their commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion is one of their personal core values. It's how they conduct their lives. It's how they, what they bring to their work, what they bring to their personal life, a lens of inclusiveness.
And it's interesting. I mean, for me, you know, there were individuals you included as super includers that in my first like thought of them as human beings wouldn't yes. have been from this perspective. And one of the things I really enjoyed about your book was seeing from a different lens and thinking about it in a very different way than maybe I have yes. viewed some of these leaders in the past.
Yes. And that's the point, you know, because most of these people are not out there beating their chest saying, and when I talk about, I want people to know, and in particular, people of color, when I talk about bringing white men to the table, because I think white men, you know, the system itself was created by white men for white men, because women weren't creating the system, you know, 400 years ago, it was white guys. And so if we are going to dismantle and rethink and reimagine inclusiveness and equity, we have to bring white guys to the table, and we have to find the good ones, the good white guys who, and I think what I also hope is a lot of young white men are vulnerable to all this nonsensical conversation about women and people of color replacing them and, you know, all this hate speech. And I wanted to highlight and showcase white men who were born like they were. These weren't men who were, some of them, yes,
yeah, some of them were born into royalty.
Right, like Sir Richard Branson, like Prince Harry. Yes. But there are people like Bob Rivers, Tim Sweeney, who before he became the managing partner for PricewaterhouseCoopers, he put himself through college with working in a supermarket bagging groceries. You know, so it was to demonstrate and show these were men who understood that they could use their privilege and power to really make systemic change.
Absolutely.
And I want these men to be the examples that young white men follow, and not the crazies who are instilling them with hate, with resentment, with anger, to say, look, I'm a white guy and I have used my privilege and power to create a more equitable environment. And look, I haven't lost anything. You know, it hasn't taken anything away from me. As a matter of fact, my life has been enriched. And that is, to me, the essence. You know, I remember Anthony, I mentioned Anthony Bourdain.
Yep.
And the thing that I loved about Anthony Bourdain, I used to look forward on Sunday nights to seeing his show Parts Unknown, because we never knew where he was going to end up, what he was going to eat, who he was going to be sitting down with. There yep. was just a curiosity factor. And I think human beings, we tend to be curious people. And I want to encourage people to learn about somebody else's lifestyle and culture. Ask questions. And I also would say to people that we have to be willing to call people in as opposed to call them out. I was just speaking with an attorney last week who called me because an incident happened at the company where he's the general counsel. And somebody asked a question during Black History Month. And the person who asked the question using a term that was derogatory. And so people got, had a gasp reaction. But the person asking the question was not asking the question to be hurtful. They were asking the question because they wanted to know. They wanted it. It was for their own knowledge. And so I think often when things like that happen, we have to be willing to give each other grace. We have to be willing to recognize that when somebody is open and willing to learn and to think differently, that we have to help them. And that should be how we react. We cannot, you know, like blow up on everything every time somebody says something. If somebody says something that is hurtful deliberatively, then we have a right to be angry, to be upset, to demand immediate reaction. Mm-hmm. And you know, whether it's a firing or an apology. But when one of our colleagues at work may have said something, I'll give you an example. One of my mentors, I'm her mentee. I've known her for 40 years since I was a very young girl. She was talking about the LGBTIA community. And she says, you know, she referred to her gay friend as, you know, somebody with a sexual preference. And I took her aside and I said, I just want you to know that when you refer to a LGBTQIA person as sexual preference, I said, you are making a judgment and you're saying that they are what and who they are because it's their preference. I said, I can tell you it is not. It is who they are authentically. It's how they were born. And so it's an orientation. So I said, the term that you use should be their sexual orientation, their sexual identity. That's how you refer and not sexual. She said, oh my goodness, I embarrassed myself. I said, no, you didn't. This is a teachable moment. I said, don't be embarrassed. I didn't embarrass you by calling you out publicly. I wanted you to know so that the next time when you're in conversation that you don't say that, but you think about, oh, this is not like a choice, like I'm choosing to be gay. No, they're not. It's who they are. It's their orientation. So that's the kind of grace that we have to be willing to give each other. And not always jump off the handle and, you know, be emotional, you know, because I know how emotionally charged certain terms and words can be. Yes. And so therefore, when this is, we're all learning, we're all in a state of perpetual learning. So let's give each other some grace.
And that goes further to that whole inclusivity kind of theme. Absolutely. And such a good place for us to take our final break. So you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
As the list of compliance challenges for businesses continues to grow, it's time to think about your payroll vendor as someone that can do more than just pay your employees. I'm Chris Clough, president of Paper Trails. We're a team of fun and local experts purveying convenient, high-tech payroll and compliance services across New England. Whether your business is struggling to stay compliant with an earned paid leave law, you're worrying about retirement savings programs, or you have questions about your state's paid family medical leave, Paper Trails has the team and tools necessary to allow you to handle the work while we handle the paperwork. To learn more about Paper Trails and how we can help your business, visit papertrails.com/HR Power.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest has been Colette Phillips, President and CEO of Colette Phillips Communications, founder and president of Get Connected, and author of The Includers. Colette, I've very much enjoyed our conversation today. I think that the last hour has gone by very, very
so
quickly. If you could give our listeners kind of one takeaway that you'd love, I mean, it's hard to encompass both your book, everything that you work on kind of into one thing, but what would that takeaway be for our listeners?
I would say that for leaders who are can demonstrate diversity, equity, and inclusion commitment at a glance, that, you know, show C-suite commitment. If you are a CEO, if you're a senior level executive in a company, you know, appoint a credible, diverse point person. A diversity, equity, and inclusion chief, somebody I like to say that person should report directly to the CEO because it sends a positive, powerful message that says, this is a priority. This is not a nice to do. This is a must do. And it is a business imperative. I want companies, if there's nothing else that you take away from this, whether you are a law firm, a retailer, a sports entity, you know, a bank, an insurance company, that when you think of diversity, equity, and inclusion, think of it through the eyes of the economics. The economics. It's a moral good thing to do, but it's also an economically smart thing to do because you are leaving significant dollars on the table if you are basically ignoring. You ignore the growing future market and you will definitely lose it in the future. And you need to have a workplace that reflects your growing marketplace. So Absolutely. Think economic, think smart. Think of your company and your marketplace growing. No one should leave money on the table. So that's the takeaway.
Thank you so much for your time today. I've gotten a lot out of our conversation. I know our listeners have too. You can find out more information about Colette and ways to connect with her on HR Power Hour. And then Colette, when does Includers come out and where can people
Yes, it's
book?
Already out. And okay. I am thrilled to say that it premiered as one of the top releases on Amazon Books. So you can purchase your book on Amazon. You can get it from the Barnes & Noble store. You can get it from Ben Bella Books. You can purchase it from Random House, Penguin Random House. So any of those places, Target has it, Walmart has it. So
Perfect.
It's really in a lot of different places.
Wonderful. Yes. Well, thank you so much for that. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.